I'm Willow Belden, and you're listening to Out There, the podcast that explores big questions through intimate stories in the outdoors. Support for Out There comes from Kind Snacks and from GoTenna, a device that pairs with your smartphone so you can exchange texts and GPS data even when there's no reception. Support also comes from Ecosia, a search engine dedicated to planting trees. Whenever you do internet searches, a certain amount of ad revenue gets generated, and if you're using Ecosia instead of, say, Google, that ad revenue goes toward tree planting. Just head to ecosia.co/out to get started and plant your first tree. Many of the stories we do on this podcast are about big outdoor adventures, like climbing mountains or biking across the country. In those stories, nature is a powerful force. It's something that can challenge you, test you, thwart you. But in this story, the natural world is much softer and gentler. Instead of being a force to reckon with, it's a healer, a soothing presence, a safety net. Today's story is about a devastating trauma that happened to one young woman, and it's about how nature helped put her life back together. It's also a story about how the natural world can steal your heart in a most unexpected way, even if you're a total city slicker. Producer Greta Weber brings us the story.
Mari Andrew is one of those people who's lived in big cities her whole life. She grew up in Seattle, lived in Chicago, D.C., New York, some international cities, and they've always felt like home to her. No matter what city she's in, she feels like she totally belongs there. But recently, something happened to Mari that drastically changed her relationship to cities. Long city blocks that once energized her became disorienting and draining. Exploring new neighborhoods wasn't fun anymore. And the one thing she loved doing most in cities was taken away from her. The thing you have to know about Mari is that she loves walking, like really loves it.
I call it urban hiking, and I'm kind of obsessive about taking these extremely long walks. I think it started in college when I was living in Chicago. And I would just take a really, really long walk through the city, and it's a huge city, so you can take a four-hour walk and not even get to the other side of the city.
The reason she loves walking so much has little to do with getting exercise. It's much more of an observational activity for her. Mari's an artist, a writer, an illustrator, and she found that walking through cities was the best way for her to get ideas for her art. She's known for these insightful, funny illustrations about the human condition. And watching people's lives bump into each other all day was the perfect inspiration.
Every idea I've ever gotten has happened when I was on a long walk.
She walked to and from work every day. It was an hour and a half both ways, and she says it was the best part of her day.
Just seeing the rhythm of the city, every morning and evening, the way that it changed throughout the day, and then all these little businesses that I would peek into.
When I met Mari in DC, where we were both living, she was on the cusp of the most exciting time in her life. After trying to get published for years, she'd finally gotten a book deal. The book was going to be a memoir about struggling through her 20s. She was going to write and illustrate it, and she quit her day job so she could focus on it. She was also getting kind of famous at this point. More than 600,000 people were following her on her Instagram, where she posts her illustrations, and people were constantly commenting on how relatable they are. There's this one illustration of hers that I see people share a lot. Picture a blank page titled Life in Three Acts. Underneath, there's three cartoonish versions of Mari. The first Mari is holding a bright blue vase, and she's smiling. The second one has dropped the vase. It's in pieces at her feet, and tears are rolling down her face. The third has picked up the pieces and turned it into a mosaic, even more beautiful than the original vase. Mari felt like she was in the third act. She'd finally picked up the pieces of her early adulthood, which involved her dad dying, a really painful breakup, and a lot of personal failures. And she was ready to enjoy the beautiful mosaic she'd made.
I was living the life. It was incredible. I could do art all day for a living. I decided to move away. So I had this amazing last month in DC where I was just able to spend time with friends and just do everything I always wanted to do in DC. I really felt like I was living a dream, like maybe someone else's life.
She got an advance on her book. She just had to finish writing it. And then she got this idea.
I thought, I can write this from anywhere, so why not the Mediterranean?
We've all had dreams like this, I think. Just to go travel and work remotely from somewhere far away. But usually, that's what they remain. Just dreams. Mari, she actually went through with it. She decided to spend 3 months in Spain and Portugal. Along with being an urban hiker, Mari's a dancer. She planned to take flamenco lessons every day in Granada, Spain, a place full of artists. Her daily life there was pretty incredible. She would sleep in every morning and wander around the city, finding little nooks to do drawings. She'd then go to her flamenco class, do some more exploring, and end the day with a 3-hour Spanish dinner. It was heavenly. Before this trip, Mari was constantly in motion. She was always moving cities and apartments and jobs, looking for her next opportunity to make it as an artist. But now, things were different and better.
It was the first time, I think maybe ever, I just felt very at peace. I felt so, not even excited or bursting with joy or anything. I just felt at peace.
When Mari was telling me all this, I was thinking how rare these moments in life are, when everything seems to magically fall into place, when what you're doing feels exactly right. So that's why what happens next is so much more devastating. At this point, Mari has been living in Spain for a month, and it's been this totally charmed existence. But then, one day, she started to feel off. She first noticed it after her flamenco lesson.
And I remember one afternoon in class, just feeling a little more tired than usual, and I thought, wow, I've really been, like, pounding on, with these flamenco shoes. It's, like, too much strain, I guess, on my legs.
When she got home that day, she had a hard time walking up the flight of stairs. Her legs did not feel right.
They felt kind of heavy, but in the way that they do when you've been doing a lot of physical activity. So it didn't seem that weird. It was just really uncomfortable.
The next day, Mari got ready to go to a really small town outside of Granada to finish illustrating her book. But the strange feeling in her legs had only gotten worse. And it started to spread to other parts of her body. Her hands started feeling weak, and she couldn't walk downstairs very well.
But I thought, I'm just going to get on the bus and go to this town, and I think I feel good enough to travel, and by tomorrow, another good night's sleep, and I'll probably feel ready to explore these caves in this random town I'm going to and finish up my book.
But when she got there, it was really hard for her to walk from the bus to the hotel. Every step felt like there were concrete blocks on her feet. It was bizarre. She had no idea what was going on, and it was really starting to freak her out.
And so I did some Google searching, was convinced I had MS or something. Really didn't know. I mean, it was hard to even describe, like heavy legs. It just, I didn't really know where to even begin searching or how much time I should wait before going to a doctor. It was all just so mysterious to me.
That night, things got bad. She could hardly stand up from being seated. When she tried to do drawings, she noticed her hand wasn't holding the pen very well. Everything felt very wrong. So she decided to go back to the city early the next day to go see a doctor there. But the next morning, even getting back to Granada felt impossible.
Every step down to the hotel lobby was like, it just felt like any second I was gonna fall.
And then she did fall. Just kind of collapsed right there in the lobby. This was the moment she realized that this weird sensation she was feeling wasn't just something she needed to get checked out. She was only 30 years old and healthy. She intuitively knew that this was bad and she needed to get to a hospital. And so she asked someone to call an ambulance right away.
At that point, that's the moment when the world began to feel like such a strange place to me. It was like, I don't feel safe here. No one knows what's going on, and I just need to get to safety. And for me, safety was a hospital.
She spent a night in a tiny hospital in the small town she was in, but the doctor there couldn't quite figure out what was going on. So the next day, she took a 2-hour ambulance ride back to Granada, where she could get to a bigger, more established hospital.
That was a really hard night. The hospital didn't have Wi-Fi. I had no way of contacting anyone I loved, and my phone was also almost out of batteries, and I just had no way to contact anyone in the outside world.
At this point, she was essentially paralyzed. She just sat slumped in a wheelchair for hours in the waiting room. She was completely at the mercy of strangers.
I felt just so helpless. I'm so independent and so used to being able to get myself out of situations. And I couldn't even get anything by myself. I couldn't go to the bathroom by myself, get water or anything.
Later that day, a doctor did some blood work and a CAT scan, which found nerve damage. He told Mari that she probably had something called Guillain-Barré syndrome. She'd never heard of it before. The doctor explained that Guillain-Barré syndrome is a rare neurological condition that causes temporary paralysis. The cause is not entirely known, though it has been linked to bacterial infections and, in super rare cases, certain vaccines. Mosquitoes can also transmit it. It's been linked to Zika. Whatever the cause, Guillain-Barré makes the immune system mistakenly attack the body's nervous system. Mari's body was waging a war against itself. So, just for a moment, put yourself in Mari's shoes. Imagine you're in a foreign country where you don't speak the language, you can't contact your family, and someone just tells you you have this disease you've never heard of. All this when just a few days ago, you felt on top of the world.
That was the hardest day of my life. I just really wanted to talk to my mom. That was the main thing. I've just felt so helpless. I kind of felt like, am I gonna be here forever? Am I gonna die? Does anyone know that I'm here? Does anyone care that I'm here?
Hey, it's Willow again. We'll hear the rest of Mari's story in just a moment. But first, a word from our sponsors. Support for Out There comes from Ecosia, a search engine that uses the ad revenue from your searches to plant trees. I've been using Ecosia for over a month now, and I have to say, it works well. I do occasionally go back to Google for certain things, like maps, but Ecosia is my default search engine. I figure it's an easy way to make a difference in the environment without spending any extra time or money. Also, a little update. I just got an email from Ecosia, and they told me that the Out There community has already done enough searches to fund the planting of more than 500 trees. If that momentum continues, Out There listeners could collectively plant thousands and thousands of trees each year. If you haven't already tried it out, you can get started and plant your first tree by going to ecosia.co/out. That's ecosia.co/out. And of course, we've got a link to that on our website. Support also comes from Kind, makers of healthy, tasty snacks. With the holidays coming up, if you're anything like me, you probably are struggling to figure out gift ideas for some of the people on your list. Maybe it's that brother-in-law who already has everything, or the friend who doesn't want more clutter in her house, or the secret Santa person from your office who you have nothing in common with. Regardless, Kind is offering up a variety pack of snack bars that could be the antidote to your gift-giving anxieties. It's called the Kind Cube, and it includes a bunch of different bars, each made with ingredients you can pronounce, like nuts and fruit and dark chocolate. It all comes in a nice box, and unlike all the cookies and chocolates that tend to make the rounds at the holidays, these snacks are not bad for you. That's actually a big part of Kind's philosophy, that you shouldn't have to choose between health and taste. You should be able to treat yourself or other people and not feel guilty. In keeping with that philosophy, the Kind Cube is full of snacks that are meant to be a gift to both your body and your taste buds. For more details, just go to kindsnacks.com/willow. That's kindsnacks.com/willow. And now back to the story.
Mari was in really bad shape at this point. Her body felt foreign, like it didn't belong to her. Nothing was numb, so she could feel everything, but she couldn't move her arms or legs or fingers. She couldn't even scratch her head or feed herself. And she was in a lot of pain from the nerve damage. She remembers this little window in her hospital room where she could see Granada, but she couldn't even look at it. It was like the view was taunting her.
It was of the mountains and the Alhambra, which is just so absolutely gorgeous. And it was all lit up at night. And I think even by the first night in the hospital, I was already so nostalgic for my life. It's like, oh, I used to walk around there. I would look outside and think, oh, I used to be there. I used to be them. I used to be those people enjoying their lives right now. I used to be drinking wine at this time. I was dancing 2 days ago.
After a few days, she was moved to a different floor. She was always being sent out for more tests so doctors could track her progress. And she started learning more about Guillain-Barré. It is super rare. Only about 1 or 2 people out of 100,000 get it each year. During the first few weeks, it can be deadly. There's no cure, but sometimes the body just heals itself. Even when that does happen, though, when the body recovers on its own, it's a long, painful process that can take years. Mari started to wonder if her life would ever be the same again. She did finally get a hold of her mom, who booked a flight to Granada and came to the hospital. Every day for the next couple weeks, Mari had an IV that pumped medicines through her to stop the body from attacking itself. That helped, but her nerves were still really damaged. She just had to wait for her body to heal itself. With the help of physical therapists, Mari slowly began regaining strength. Then, one day, something happened that caused a sort of shift within her. She didn't fully understand it at the time, but it marked the beginning of an important change.
I think it was like a really nice day, and my mom was there at the time, and I asked, do you think that I could just go outside? And she said, yeah, I think so. And I guess because we were Americans and my mom speaks no Spanish, they kind of just let us do what we wanted. I think they just didn't even want to deal with us. So people didn't really ask us questions. So we just escaped. And I sat out there in my wheelchair, and it was so hard to be so isolated from the world. Like, the hospital's just, it's just the worst. It's the worst place. There's nothing that resembles the actual world in the hospital. There's nothing that feels comfortable or familiar. It's just a total alien place. So when I got to be outside, it was like I felt the sun, which was such a great feeling. And I felt so human. It's like I could smell things and birds chirping. And I don't know if I'm totally romanticizing it, but it just felt like, oh, yeah, this is what a human should feel like.
She never wanted to go back inside again.
My mom was like, oh, it's getting kind of cold out. And I thought, what are you talking about? I want to be here forever and ever. I just want to sit in this chair in this grass and be here forever.
After that day, Mari and her mom started escaping from the hospital every morning.
And she'd like take me to the grocery store, which I thought was just the most incredible experience. It was like, I just loved, I had no problem with like being seen in my pajamas and unwashed hair. And I did not care at all what I looked like.
Throughout all this, Mari was slowly getting better. She transitioned from a wheelchair to a cane. She could take the cap off her chapstick without any help. And she was finally able to write her name with a ballpoint pen. After nearly a month in the hospital, she wanted to be back in the outside world. She was determined to enjoy the rest of her trip that she'd worked so hard for. She wanted out. But when she did finally leave, it wasn't at all what she expected. Her experience of the beautiful city of Granada had radically changed.
And it was terrifying. It was like seeing this city that I was so comfortable with, and suddenly it was this really scary place. It was like everything about it was, I felt so exposed, and it felt like it was such a dangerous place to be. Like there were just so many people and concrete and steps and just dangerous lurking everywhere. And I remember when I was paralyzed, I will be so happy when I can walk again. I'll be so happy when I can be in a city and go order coffee. That was like my big thing. I just wanted to go order coffee. But it was also difficult because I couldn't really like hold a coffee cup yet. I wasn't walking very well. I would fall easily. I did learn how to get myself back up, but it just felt like this isn't where I am at home anymore. The world isn't really my home anymore.
Yeah, so like all that feeling that you used to get when you were in cities, was it like pretty much gone at that point?
Yeah, it was terrible because I love walking around cities. And for me, that was always the most comfortable thing that I could possibly do in any country, no matter the language barrier. I always felt so at home in a city. I can figure this out. I know how this works. This is my turf. And it just felt like cities were full of danger for me. And it was also like, I didn't feel like I belonged.
Her happy place had become her nightmare. And it wasn't just Granada. A little later, she went to Portugal, and things were just as bad there.
I would see, like, a beautiful alley where I wanted to go take a picture, and it was, like, you know, two blocks away. And that just felt like, I don't want to walk all that way. It was so exhausting, and I thought, what if I get there, and then it's, like, too hard to walk back?
She also noticed that people started treating her differently. Before, she could be totally anonymous in cities. Now, she couldn't sign the receipt for her lunch without people looking at her weirdly. Her hands still trembled when she held the pen. And when she walked, she felt like there was a rubber band around her legs.
So I took a lot of taxis to really short distances, and I remember so many cab drivers getting really angry because it was such a short distance for them to go. And I didn't speak any Portuguese. I couldn't say I'm disabled. I would use a cane, which I didn't really need that much, but for me it was so helpful to have like a symbol, like just kind of show people what was wrong, because at that point it was a pretty invisible illness. I wasn't walking very well, but I didn't look like there was anything wrong with me. You know, being in the wheelchair is such a good outside marking. Something's wrong here, but I didn't have that anymore. I just felt like no one knows what's going on with me. It was really hard.
And all the little things that we do automatically every day became huge burdens for her.
Pulling my hair back was impossible. Brushing my teeth in a normal way was impossible. Putting on makeup was really hard. Getting myself dressed was really hard. Putting on shoes, impossible. Everything was just so hard. I remember just that phrase, like, so hard. Everything is hard.
At this point, everything felt like too much to bear. The world was just too overwhelming, and so she left Europe. She moved in with her mom in the suburbs outside of Baltimore. She felt ready to let herself be taken care of again, and just to focus on getting better. And she did get better, physically, but emotionally, she was a mess.
I felt still pretty isolated from people. I couldn't be a part of the world in the hospital. I couldn't be a part of the world when I was out of the hospital in Europe. And then I couldn't really be a part of my friends. It's like, they don't know what I'm going through. How are we even going to relate?
Mari tried to get back into working. She started some new drawing projects. She did a few commissions for people, but she was lonely.
I didn't feel like seeing people would really bring me happiness, so I just kind of stayed in my own little world for quite some time.
So she's out in the suburbs living at her mom's. She's not seeing her friends. She's depressed. And on top of all that, even though she's regained control over her limbs, her muscles are totally atrophied. She's at this point where it feels like she'll never be at peace with the world again. Never feel at home in her own life. But then, finally, she does something that changes everything. She goes outside. It's not the kind of experience she used to have outside before she got sick. After all, she's in the suburbs now, so she can't really go urban hiking. But she thinks back to something that she did in Portugal. It was a wonderful day, one of the only good days she had after being released from the hospital, and she found herself on this little beach.
And we were walking on the sand, which is normally pretty difficult. It's, you know, it's you kind of wobble around. And it was the first time I just felt like, wow, I can do. Like, the earth was made for me. Like, the city wasn't made for me, but the sand is for me. And then we were walking on some dirt, and it was like, oh, this feels good, because I couldn't walk very well anyway, so it was like walking on sand or walking on dirt. It's kind of uneven, and it just felt like it was holding me. It felt like it was protecting me. And so from then, I felt like, all right, the city's kind of a scary place, but I like being here. I like being in a natural environment.
It was weird. She'd never appreciated nature in this way before, but it was this outdoor place where she started to feel okay again. She felt more like herself on the beach that day than she had in weeks. Now, back in the U.S., she thought that maybe she could replicate that feeling somehow. So even though walking was still difficult, she started taking walks through these secluded suburban parks near her mom's house. And that sense of security she felt on the beach back in Europe, it returned. Being out in the woods was oddly comforting.
It felt really safe. It felt like I could walk as slow as I wanted, and I could kind of stumble as I wanted. If I fell, it was soft. I really liked being around animals. It was really soothing for me, and I didn't have to explain to them what was going on. So being around wildlife was so nice. And so I just had to be outside every day. That was a huge part of my healing and just feeling like, oh, there is somewhere where I belong.
If you told Mari a year ago that nature would be the thing to help her through the most traumatic experience in her life, she probably wouldn't have believed you. Even though she'd grown up in Seattle and was always surrounded by hikers and nature lovers, she never quite understood it.
I think I just didn't know how to be in it. I never knew if I had like the right gear for hiking or like how to do it exactly or like, are there bears? I just didn't. I think that it was more intimidation than anything else at a certain point. Like, oh, what if I go hiking with a bunch of people who are experts and bring all the right snacks?
So this sense of comfort in nature was entirely new for Mari. Instead of being intimidated by it, she was drawn to it. She started to understand and really appreciate what it had to offer.
It's not a place where you have to prove yourself. It's not a place where you have to express yourself. You're really just like at your essence. Like, I really felt like this is my truest self right now. And there's nothing I need to give, and there's nothing that I need from anyone. It's just me in the world, which is really nice.
I think we all go through these moments when we lose things that define us. Like when you graduate from college and you can't call yourself a student anymore, or when you move from your home state or change careers. I picture these things as anchors, grounding us in an otherwise chaotic existence. We make sense of ourselves by the things we do, the places we live, the people we surround ourselves with. And when these anchors fall away, we feel lost, untethered. For Mari, who identified as an independent city person her whole life, losing that part of herself was disorienting. She didn't really know who she was anymore.
And I think when I was outside just with myself and with the birds, I felt a strong sense of identity just for being a person, just existing.
It might be another year or more until she's 100% healed. She still gets aches and pains in her legs after long walks through the city. Her feet hurt a lot and her hands are clumsy. But she's gotten that sense of peace back. And in large part, it's because she has this new thing to turn to ground herself. That thing is nature.
I feel like that's so part of who I am now. It's really added to my identity. I feel like now I have to be out in a park every day. I have to be outside. That's a really big thing for me now.
Getting hurt often takes people away from nature. But for Mari, it's been exactly the opposite. Her Guillain-Barré diagnosis and the physical and emotional fallout from it brought her closer to the outdoors. Nature has become a new home for her, a place she feels like she totally belongs. And yes, she still lives in New York, one of the busiest cities in the world. But there's a leafy park near her apartment on the Lower East Side. And she spends an hour there each day, just sitting, looking at the trees, listening to birds.
That was Greta Weber. She's a producer based in Brooklyn, and you can see more of her work at GretaMWeber.com. Mari Andrews' book, the one she was working on in Spain when she got sick, comes out this spring. It's called Am I There Yet? The Loop-de-Loop Zigzagging Journey to Adulthood. We'll let you know when it's available. And in the meantime, if you want to check out Mari's illustrations, her Instagram name is @MariAndrew. We've also got one of her illustrations on our website. Thank you. I'll give you a sneak peek at our next episode in just a moment. But first, a word from our sponsor. Support for Out There comes from GoTenna. If you've ever gone hiking or mountain biking or most any kind of adventuring, really, chances are you've ended up in a place without cell phone reception. Now, that can be a wonderful thing, but it can also be scary. If venturing into the land of no reception makes you a little nervous, you're not alone. GoTenna is made for people like you. It's a little device that pairs wirelessly with your smartphone, and it lets you exchange texts and GPS info with other people regardless of where you are, even when there's no service. It also has an app that gives you detailed offline maps for any region in the world. There's no subscription or service plan you have to pay for. You just buy the device itself and you're ready to go. And you can get $25 off your purchase with the discount code OUTTHERE25. That's OUTTHERE25. For more information, just go to GoTenna.com. That's GoTenna.com. And as always, we have a link on our website. Coming up on our next episode, we have a story about one young woman who loses her father in a motorcycle crash. As you might imagine, his death hits her pretty hard. She gets depressed, starts having panic attacks, and then one day she's sitting in her grad school dorm room thinking about her dad, and she realizes,
I couldn't remember what he looked like anymore. It hadn't been long since he died. How could I forget so easily? I tried imagining his features in my mind. I couldn't. I looked through some photos of him on my computer, but then I'd forget what I just looked at and have to go back and look again. Then I played some of his favorite songs from the Rolling Stones. Nothing.
The story looks at what happens when we try to distract ourselves from our grief and explores how we can reconnect with a loved one we've lost. That's coming up on December 21st. A huge thank you to everyone who made contributions to Out There for Giving Tuesday. Your support means the world to us. And thank you also to everyone who has written or called to share your comments. I can't tell you how happy it makes me when I get an email or a voice memo or a card in the mail saying that one of our stories has touched you in some way. I wanted to give a shout out to some of our new patrons, Brian Alsup, Alex Metz, Steve Russell, Tony Pitts, Scott Bolan, and Pat Grunberg all made financial contributions. Ruth Tronick also made a contribution in honor of all the people in Laramie, Wyoming who build and maintain trails. And finally, Deb and Vince Garcia have been longtime supporters of the show. Thank you all so much. If you haven't had a chance to make a contribution of your own and you'd like to, just go over to our website, outtherepodcast.com, and click support. That's it for this episode. Our marketing and business development director is Alex Egerking, and our theme music was written by Jared Arnold. Have a beautiful day, be bold, go outside, and find your dreams.